Good morning.
Morning.
Good to see you. It's good to be back here this morning. I want to begin by saying thank you to Harry for filling in for me last Sunday. I know he did an excellent job, and I appreciate his willingness to do that. We were able to worship last Sunday with the church in Garner, preaching that meeting. I appreciate God allowing us that opportunity, but I am glad to be back with you this morning. Today I'm wearing my jazzier suit. If you know me, I'm a little bit more plain sometimes. My wife gets on to me all the time. When we go to the ice cream shop, I get vanilla most of the time. She says, "Don't you want anything jazzier than that?" And I'm like, "No, it's just what I like." Well, I'm wearing my kind of jazzier suit today. I don't know if I can pull it off or not. But it's good to see you this morning. I think about life and the different paths that we take as human beings. You know, life often is kind of like that long family vacation that we take, that long road. You ever been in the car and heard from the back seat, "How much longer?" You wait about 5 or 10 minutes longer, "How much longer?" And you're in the front and you're trying to be patient. "We'll be there when we get there. It's going to take a while. How much longer?" And then eventually you say, "Anybody else ask anything about how long it's going to take? I'm pulling this car over and we're going home." Right? You may have experienced those trips. But, you know, we often think of life as this straight line, right? And we're at one point and we're traveling to a destination. But is that really how life works? It's not, is it? It's a lot more chaotic than that. There are a lot more twists and turns. There are a lot more side roads and other forks in the road that you and I are faced with, where we have to make decisions about, will I choose this or will I choose that, or maybe it's that over there. And we get to all these different decisions in life and we wonder and we ponder. Sometimes we're quick at making a decision, but life is filled with choice, isn't it? And choices to do good, to do bad. Sometimes choices are just choices, and to do this or to do that. Do you ever, though, get to a point in your life, I do this, I get in kind of a melancholy state, and I'm wondering, man, I wonder, had I done this, what would have turned out here? Or do you ever get in those moments where you actually have regret? You feel real regret over, man, you know, that happened 20 years ago, but I still feel it today. It's like I live in that moment, you know, and I wish I had made a better choice. And we think about what could have been. What could have been had I chosen differently or acted differently or spoken differently? What could have been? You know, we think about, you know, big questions like the meaning of life. What does life mean? What is our purpose? In the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're going to kind of start there and move forward, but Solomon, as the scripture states, the wisest man to ever have lived. Very, very smart man. But you go and you read the book of Ecclesiastes, and there are certain times you walk away kind of feeling depressed. You know, you especially read that text that Vance shared with us in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and you read where he says, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." That word vanity, of course, means empty or useless. And so he goes on from that verse to explore the idea, the meaning of life, right? And he's trying to hone in or dig at what does it all really mean? What's really important in life? What is it I'm searching for? What is it I'm digging at in my life? What when I get to the end of life, what do I want to look back at and say, man, that was a good life? Think about that idea. Like, what does it all mean? And so you search for that meaning in your life. People invest in all kinds of different things, don't they? They invest in, look for meaning in education. Maybe if I learn a lot, maybe if I'm able to understand better my world, my life, my whatever field you choose. Maybe you explore the meaning of life in your employment, right? You think the next job or the next advancement at work, that's going to get me closer to finding what it means to be successful in my life. Maybe it's in chasing other things. Maybe it's in chasing a relationship in my life. Maybe it's in chasing some kind of experience. We talk a lot about experiences and being alive, right, in the moment. The other day, the boys had an opportunity to ride down a zip line. Man, they were excited about it. One of our neighbors has a real nice zip line, and they even put one of those spider swings on it, which is this round swing. It's kind of got a net bottom in it, and they got in the middle of it and were able to hold on. And, oh, they thought that was fun. That was a thrill, right? And we seek thrills in life. Maybe that'll give us fulfillment. Maybe that'll meet our expectation. Well, you go and you read Ecclesiastes and you read Solomon's response to all that. It's a reality that we're all really aware of. In the end, those things, what do they accomplish? In the end, what do I gain? What makes a good life? When you get to the end and it's your turn, right, to walk on to that next road into eternity, and you look backwards, even now as you sit here in this room, have you lived a good life? Would you say your life has been good? Has it been profitable? Have you left anything behind you? Is what you've done felt successful? Felt good? What makes a good life? I want to explore this question by looking at a text in Luke 16. In Luke 16, Jesus shares with us a parable. And it's a parable about two individuals. Lazarus, who he gives the name of, and then another man he just simply calls the rich man. He doesn't identify him in any other kind of way. He only calls him the rich man. And so you can get into this and dig into the doctrine about Hades. We're not doing all of that, or the afterlife. We'll leave that for a different day. But I do want to think more deeply about the rich man. And who is he? And what does his life really represent to each of us? If you go back and you look in that context of Luke 16, he's talking about end of time things, right? And he's trying to prepare the disciples and us as his readers about the approach of the end of time. And he shares with us this parable. And there in verses 19 through 21, he identifies these two individuals. And I want you to note who they are. Number one, he says, there was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate was laid a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. So you really, Jesus is comparing two very different lives. How did they get here in their lives? I don't know. But I know where they are in the moment. You have one man who is in a really terrible state, as we would see as human beings. He's hungry. he's sore. He hurts physically. He doesn't have the what we would say the good things in life, does he? Would you say that man has lived a good life? I would think most people would say no, right? That's not a good life. To be laid at someone's gate there every day, sore, hungry, poor. That what people would claim to be a good life. And then you compare that with the other man. He's very wealthy. He eats very well. He has a good name in the community. He has a good bank account. He has what many might say is a good life. A good life. And so we ask the question, does he really? Who's really lived a good life? You know, one of the things we realize as we live is that death is the great equalizer. Let me explain what I mean. All right, so you've got two different men from two very different states in life. And yet you notice what he says in verse 22. Verse 22, we'll come back to that passage there in verse 27. But let's go to Luke 16:22. It says, "The poor man died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried." Now, when you read that description, isn't it kind of stark contrast between the way these two men's lives ended? You have one man, very poor in life, who is carried, his spirit is carried away by angels. Very beautiful picture, right, that paints in our minds. And then you notice the rich man and how different that is. He died and was buried. Very blunt, very to the point. Not very beautiful picture. In death, in life, these two men live very differently. The rich man had all he could want. The poor man had very little to nothing. And yet in death, things changed, didn't it? Death became the great equalizer of these two individuals. There's a passage we've been looking at, the book of Revelation, in our Thursday morning class. And in Revelation 18, as he's talking about the demise of the empire, of the Roman Empire, John, in God in revealing to John, reveals in Revelation 18:16, "Alas, alas, for the great city that was clothed in fine linen, in purple and scarlet, adorned with gold, with jewels, and with pearls." That sounds very similar, doesn't it? That sounds very much like what we're looking at in Luke 16. But notice what he goes on to say in verse 17. "For in a single hour, all his wealth, all this wealth, has been laid waste." In a single hour, all that he had accumulated, all that this nation state had accumulated, was gone. It accounted for nothing. It got them nowhere in regard to the judgment of God. And yet, in life, many would have looked at Rome and said, "Wow, that's a powerful nation. That's a nation that has it, that is living the good life." And yet God says, in an hour, in a single hour, it will be laid waste. In 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, Paul, writing to the Corinthian brethren, says that we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. You know, sometimes, almost all the time, you go to a sporting event, you go and sit in an arena somewhere, you go to a play, you go into that venue, whatever it is. What do you notice about where people sit? There are the good seats, and then there are the less good seats. I've been to several sporting events where I've sat on the top row. And I've sat at a few events down near the bottom. It's a different experience. It's a very different experience, isn't it? You ever been on an airplane before? We segment people on airplanes, on a lot of them, don't we? We have first class, we have business, and we have coach. I've spent a lot of time in coach in my life. It's a little tighter, I imagine, in those seats than it is in first class. Who gets those really nice seats? Those who have wealth and power, right? Those who can afford it. Those who are living the good life, right? Paul says, when we approach the judgment seat of Christ, they're not going to be those who can buy their way to the front of the line or to get into the good line. You go to Disney World, what does everybody want? A fast pass. I remember we planned a Disney trip a few years ago, and I have a sister-in-law who's very organized. And as soon as she could, the very moment you could get online and start reserving fast passes, she was on there. And I was glad for it because she set us up. So you want those fast passes, why? You want to go to the front of the line. You want to get in the good line, the quick line. When we stand before God, there's not going to be different lines. There's not going to be different areas to sit in. All will stand before God. All will stand before God bare. And all of us will lay out before Him what we've done in the body. Death is the great equalizer, isn't it? In death, we also discover what we truly regret. You know, there are times when maybe we look back and we regret things. And we wish things had been better. And we think what could have been. In death, we will truly have a moment to look back and to question what could have been. In Luke 16:27, that's what the rich man is doing. The text tells us, and he said, I beg you, Father, he's talking to Abraham. I beg you, Father, that you send him, talking about Lazarus, to my father's house. For I have five brothers, in order that he may warn them, so that they will not also come to this place of torment. This man is living with a great amount of guilt or of regret, asking himself, man, what could have been, what I should have done, what I shouldn't have left undone. But what you notice in this moment, it's too late. It's too late to make change. It's too late to correct the things in my life that I should have made right to start with. In death, it's too late to get it right. It's too late to change what could have been to what is. You ever had to get somewhere, maybe it was to work, or it was on a trip, or it was to worship, and you woke up? Now, there's times when you wake up and you have just enough time to get into the car and get there on time. Now, maybe it means I don't get a shower today, but I can at least get my hair right and get my clothes on and get there. There are other times that you waking up. Now, I've done this. I don't know if you ever have. And you've woken up late and there's no possibility of getting there on time. That's an empty feeling, isn't it? That's an empty feeling. I'm lost before I started. I'm late. And then the panic sets in, right? Being late. And so, that's all kind of pessimistic, isn't it? It's all kind of negative. I don't want to leave you negative. I want us to think positively. I want us to think proactively. And so as we finish out here, we ask the question, how can I live a life without regret? How can I get to the end and not have to ask what could have been and to look back and say, I did all I could do. And I've set things in order to do my best. First thing, when we think about how do I live a life without regret, number one, we need to recognize the opportunities that we have in our life in the moment we live. In Luke 16:25, had the rich man done that in his life, he wouldn't have had to ask what could have been. He could have done it while he lived, before he ran out of time. Our clocks are ticking, and opportunities are coming and they're going. Are we making the best use of our time? In Luke 16:25, when you look at the rich man, Abraham reminds him. He says, child, remember that you in your lifetime received your good things. What kind of good things? You go down to verse 19, remind about the passage we read earlier. There was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, who feasted sumptuously every day. Now you read that and you're like, well, how is that opportunity? There's a lot of opportunity in verse 19. A lot of opportunity for a man to do a lot of good. See, he saw those things he possessed as his own. That's not the right way to see those things. Wealth is not yours. Wealth is an opportunity. The things you possess are all an opportunity. That wealth he possessed was an opportunity for him to reach out to someone else in need. It was an opportunity for him to take the good news of God's law to those who are lost and dying. That wealth gave him opportunity to do a lot of great things in his life. God had given him an opportunity to do good things, and yet he wasted it by saving it, by trying to own it and possess it. He had a table that was that had food constantly on it. And he had a man sitting outside of his gates who was hungry. And he had every day he passed by him was an opportunity to share. To share in what he had with others. And yet he watched each and every one of those opportunities go by without doing anything about it. He misunderstood what his life was made up of. James reminds us in James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that should be a kind of first fruits, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. I want to ask you a question. A question I ask myself constantly. Why was I born in America? Why was I born to the parents that I had? You ever taken any time to go anywhere else? We live very well here. I think sometimes about, what if God had chosen to put me in a different country, in a different place? What if I'd been born in, say, Belize? What if I'd been born in Africa? What if I'd been born in the Middle East? What if I'd been put somewhere else? And I could have been. God brought us here for a reason. Now, I'm not telling you that to make you feel guilty. You shouldn't feel guilty. God put you here. But what I want us to realize is that the fact you're here, that you've been given so much, means God's going to require more of you. You, by your very existence in this place at this time, is opportunity. Why weren't you born in the 8th century? Why weren't you born in the middle of the dark ages? Talking about a depressed time, a difficult time. Try being born then. When disease was rampant, when hunger was everywhere. And yet God chose for you to be alive today. God's given you an opportunity. The real question is what do we do with it? In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus relates to us a series of parables. In one of them, he gives us a parable about different individuals given different talents. Right? And you remember, and I won't go through the whole thing again, but you remember one was given five, one was given two, and one was given one. And you remember the ones with five and two, they both doubled it, and they were praised by God because they had used their talents, their opportunities. However, the other one, he hid his talent. He tried to hold on to his talent, tried to possess it as though it was his. It was never his. It was always God's. It was always his master's. What you have is not your own. We need to realize that. Your children are an opportunity. They are not your own. They are a responsibility given to you by God. They're an opportunity. Your spouse is not your own. They're a gift from God. Your home is not your own. It is a gift from God. These are opportunities. We need to recognize the opportunity, and then we need to make the most of those opportunities with the time we have left. All of us have made mistakes. Let's go ahead and clear the room on that. None of us have used our opportunities as best we can. All right, so we could sit here and we could bemoan and regret all the times we've done things improperly. We could also sit here and think about all the times we did great things and waste all of our time idolizing what we've done in the past. All we have is what is today. With the time we have left, we need to make the most with that time. In Luke 16, again, in verse 30, and discussing with the Abraham talking to the rich man and responding to him, after he says, you know, can you send Lazarus back? You know, if one rises from the dead, they'll believe him, right? If you send him back and he warns them, I want you to notice what Abraham says. Verse 30, he says, No, Father Abraham, this is the rich man responding back to him. But if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent. And Abraham said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced if someone should rise from the dead. Now, there's a deeper discussion there about Jesus. I'm not going to get into that today. But I want you to notice something there about what the rich man is asking for. He's asking for a miracle, for some kind of supernatural event to occur to wake his family up, because that's the way he lived. That was what he was hoping for now that he's looking backwards. If I'd only had a miracle, if I'd only had some kind of supernatural experience, Abraham says, no, that won't work either. If you're sitting around waiting for God to come and grab you by the hand and direct you where to go, you're waiting for the wrong thing. If you're waiting for someone else in your life to grab you by the hand and walk you where you need to be, you're waiting for the wrong thing. It ain't going to happen. That's not the way life works. Life is about you and me making decisions and choices in the time we have, not waiting for someone else to push us in the right direction. We must make best use of the time we have. And then finally, we must prepare ourselves for the end of time. for the end of this life, because it is quickly approaching. The rich man had failed to prepare himself. And so as he sat there, or stood there in torment in Hades, and he looked across at Abraham, Abraham reminds him that there is this great gulf fixed between you and me so that we cannot cross. You know, in Isaiah 59 and verse 1 and 2, Isaiah the prophet reminds us that our sins have separated us from God. That it is our transgressions, our wrongness, that has created a gulf between us and God. That rich man had a gulf between him and God. He had put up a wall between him and God. And he had not spent the time that he had to correct that. There are some sitting here in this room who, whether they want to admit it or not, but as you sit here this morning, you realize there is a gulf fixed between you and God. You get up every day and you ignore it, but the question lingers at the back of your mind. What will I do with Jesus? Am I prepared to meet eternity? And you know the answer is no. And yet you foolishly continue to live your life in that state. That rich man lived his life as a foolish man. There was a date prepared that he was not prepared for. There was an exam that was going to take place that he had no idea how to answer it. And he was going to fail that exam because he had not prepared himself for it. If you leave here this morning unprepared to meet God, realize one thing, it's your own foolishness to walk outside those doors. You have time. You have opportunity. You have an opportunity this morning to begin to correct things. There are some of us who are Christians who are making fools of our time, who are foolishly giving away opportunities in our life. When we get to heaven, to the end of life, and look back over our loved ones and wonder what could have been had I acted differently? Am I misusing my opportunities at evangelism? Am I letting those escape without doing anything about it? I would dare say many of us would say yes, we have in the past. What will I do today? Are you prepared to meet your God? Have you prepared yourself for that last great day? Don't live like the fools who foolishly think this life will just go on forever. Let's understand and know the wisdom of God, to understand there is a day coming in which all men of all different walks of life will all kneel before the great throne of God. Let us be prepared for that eventuality. Do you have a need? Do you have a need this morning to make things right with God? We encourage you, exhort you, please don't let another opportunity pass you by. Make the best use of your time. Live like the wise. And do not die like the foolish. What could have been can be what it was. This morning, can we help you? If you need to become a child of God, that opportunity is afforded to you this morning. We can help you in that, in obeying the gospel, being immersed into Christ. If you're a child of God and you know right now you're not prepared, we can help you too. If we can help in any way, please come as together we stand and sing.